And fifthly, what we call rights means of livelihood. Now, rights means of livelihood is an extension, really, of the right action. Buddhism says, in effect, that you can't divide your life into compartments. You can't, as it were, say, well, here's my private life. I'm going to lead that morally, on an ethical basis, and here's my professional life, or my business life. There, well, I'm just not going to bother about morality at all. I'm not going to bother about ethics at all. Buddhism says you can't do that. If you divide your life in this way, you divide yourself. You divide your own psyche, your own mind, your own soul. You introduce a sort of split. And that ultimately will prove disastrous. Whatever principles you have, whatever convictions you have, whatever beliefs you have to live by them, practice them in all walks of life, in all aspects of life, private, public, domestic, professional, and so on. Because you are all of one piece. You can't split yourself up in this way. So those same principles that you observe in your private life, observe also in your professional life. The Buddha says that no person who is engaged in earning a living should do so in a way which is antisocial, which injures other beings, or which degrades himself or herself. So for the Buddhists, various professions are prohibited by the Buddha. A Buddhist cannot be a butcher. A Buddhist cannot trade in poisons. A Buddhist cannot trade in weapons of war, which will be used for mass destruction. A Buddhist cannot trade in liquor. All these are immoral ways of earning one's living. But the fundamental principle, we can extend the applications indefinitely, the fundamental principle is don't make money, don't earn your living directly or indirectly, in any way which injures other living beings, or which degrades your own self. These are the twin pillars or twin principles of right means of livelihood. Then next, after right means of livelihood, right effort. Here we come from the economic more to the psychological. Right effort is fourfold. Getting rid of mental states of an unwholesome nature, which are already in our minds, preventing the entry of those that are not already in our minds, promoting the growth of those good states which are already present in us, and introducing those good states which are or not already there. This is the fourfold right effort. In other words, the Buddha is saying, don't think that good thoughts will come of their own accord. Don't think the bad thoughts will go of their own accord. You have to keep constant watch over your own mind from instant to instant, second to second. Just see what is there. Sometimes if you look at your mind, if you catch yourselves unawares, you'll see that some very unlovely thoughts are there. Sometimes very unkind thoughts or greedy thoughts or unpleasant thoughts of very many kinds. So this is one of the first things that one must do in the spiritual life. Look at one's own mind, see what is there, try to eliminate what is bad, and try to develop, try to cultivate what is good. And this requires an effort. It requires this fourfold right effort, otherwise no success. If one isn't prepared to make an effort, then there can be no success in the spiritual life. So right effort is the sixth step. And seventhly, what we call right mindfulness or right awareness. Whatever one does, one must be aware. Most people just drift through like unaware, just like zombies, as we say, not really alive at all, just simulacra, just appearing to be alive, but really dead. Why? Because they're not aware, they're not awake. They don't know really what's going on, even in themselves. They're in a dreamy, dull, twilight sort of state. Sometimes it's rather remarkable when one is giving a talk or a lecture just to look at the faces of people. Not so much young people, but more especially older people. They sit. They appear to be taking it all in, but there's a vacant, far away sort of look in their eyes. And you know that they're not really with it, as we say. They're not really there. They hear the words, but they're not really listening. They're not aware of what you are saying. Sometimes you can tell almost what they're thinking of, where their thoughts are, at home, or in the office, or at school perhaps, if they're teachers, wondering, but they're not with you, they're not aware. They just forget themselves, which is the worst sort of forgetfulness. So the Buddha stresses very much awareness, mindfulness, being awake. If you're not really aware, not really mindful, you're not really alive. An unaware person, for all practical purposes, is a dead person, an insensitive person, a person who doesn't grow, who doesn't progress spiritually, even if they do so intellectually or physically. To right mindfulness, mindfulness of the body, of the emotions, of thoughts, and mindfulness of higher spiritual ideas. Mindfulness is one of the things which the Buddha insists upon most of all. He says mindfulness or awareness is always useful. It goes along with every other virtue. You can't practice any virtue without being aware and without being mindful. In Christianity, love is stressed very much. In Buddhism, we might say, it's mindfulness or awareness which is stressed very much. You can't even love unless you're aware. Otherwise, it's just blind instinctual affection and not true love at all. So right mindfulness or right awareness. And lastly, eighthly, right concentration and meditation. This is a very vast subject. It involves concentration exercises, purification of the mind, practice of meditation, and gradually raising the whole level of consciousness to a point where one may not even be conscious of the physical body, and one enters, as it were, a new world of perception, of feeling, even of, as it were, vision, and eventually, as a result of one's efforts in this direction, sees the truth face to face without any intermediate intellectual activity, but a pure spiritual faculty developed as a result of one's concentration and meditation. And that, of course, leads directly to enlightenment, directly to nirvana. So this is the Noble Eightfold Path. Every Buddhist is supposed to follow this path, developing right understanding, the right emotional attitude, practicing right speech, right action, right means of livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and finally, right concentration and meditation leading to enlightenment or to nirvana. So this is the path, and the Buddha says very emphatically, you must walk the path yourselves. He says, I've walked it for myself, but I can't walk it for you. You save yourself. He said, no man can purify another. Purity and impurity depend upon one's own efforts, or lack of effort. So walk the path yourself. Self-help. This is one of the fundamental principles of Buddhism. You can do it yourself. That's why sometimes it's said, rather jokingly, that Buddhism is a do-it-yourself religion. Nobody can do it for you. So do it yourself. Follow the path. Tread the path yourself with your own two feet. The Buddhas only show the way. The Tathagatas, the Buddhas, are like signposts. The signpost says 20 miles to run, whatever it may be. So the Buddha says, well, Noble Eightfold Path to enlightenment, to nirvana. You tread it yourself. He shows the way. But Buddhism also says, if you make the effort, you can attain. Anyone who makes the effort can attain. It's not that there are some chosen few who can do it and others who can't. Everybody who makes the effort can obtain the same results. If you put your mind to it, anyone who is present here today, this afternoon, if you put your mind to it, if you resolve that you're going to practice right understanding, right emotional attitude, right speech, and so on, well, as time goes on, you can make progress, you can grow gradually towards enlightenment and nirvana. You don't even need to call yourself a Buddhist. The main thing is you must accept the principles and you must follow the practices, tread the path. This is the main thing. If you do that, then infallibly you'll get the right results.